The content shared on Your Life, Your Wealth Network reflects the views of the host and guests of the program only and are not necessarily the views of Cordasco Financial Network or its advisors. This media production is educational in nature and should not be construed as financial, legal, or tax advice or a solicitation or presentation of sale of any financial products or services. Please consult a professional prior to making any financial, tax, or legal decisions. Welcome to the Your Life, Your Wealth Network, helping you find clarity and comfort for your life and wealth. Now, here's your host, financial advisor, and CEO of Cordasco Financial Network, Steve Cordasco.
Welcome back to Your Life, Your Wealth. I'm Steve Cordasco. We have a great show planned for you today. Here's what's affecting your life and your wealth. Chris Tidmore from Vanguard will be joining the program. We'll talk about the secret skills advisors need to get you an extra 3% on your investments. Later in the show, we'll talk about Amazon. I'll explain how the giant retailer can get your life moving in a fun new direction, and it includes brick-and-mortar stores. Also, I'll explain how terrorism is no longer a threat to your wallet. But first, let's talk about millionaires. I'm going to get into kind of the stats behind $1 million and what $1 million means today and the number of people who have $1 million today, and talk about what that means over time. It's funny because when this article came to me, right, when the article came to me, I thought right away, whenever I think of $1 million, I thought about the first time I ever really connected with the word million. And it happened in the 1970s when there was a TV show on that I used to watch called The Bionic Man. And you guys remember the story. It was $6 million to rebuild him. Steve Austin, he was an astronaut and, you know, went through a bad time, and they had to rebuild him. And it was $6 million. Well, to do that today, that $6 million that it cost in 1974 to create the Bionic Man is $34 million today. I don't know what a show would do for my kids where it was the $34 million man. Would it resonate to them? They watch Transformers, which I guess is similar to that, but nobody puts a dollar value on a Transformer other than when I go in the store to buy one. So let's dig into this. The climbing stock market, many believe, has helped create millionaires. Same with rising real estate. Today, we have 500,000 new millionaires in the United States, according to a new report that came out. And they kept this data up until 2014. There's always a lag time on the data. So we have 500,000 new millionaires in our country. There are 10.1 million households that have $1 million of investable assets. That's excluding the value in the primary residence. So if you're walking around saying you're one of them, and therefore you're one of the 10.1, this is liquid dollar. This is money you have that you can go out and invest. This isn't the money that's built into your house. If you want to fall into this statistic, sell your house and you're there if you have $1 million worth of built-in equity in the house. So I need to kind of couch that. Okay, that's up from past, and that's an all-time record high. The number of households, I find this interesting, with 5 million or more, it hit a new record as well. There's 1.3 million households with $5 million of liquid assets. That doesn't sound like a lot of households to me. Maybe it does to you. And when you get to $25 million of actual cash on hand to invest, it's 142,000 households. So the story is the rich get richer, but it also needs to be noted that people are becoming wealthier. Wealth can be created in this country. We've been taught that that's not the case, and I don't think it's fair. Why? Because the political environment paints a picture that's different than reality. The average number of millionaires, the average age of a millionaire today is 62 years of age. That's not shocking to me. Vince, my producer, found that shocking. I guess because we hear of so many wealthy tech folks who are younger, right? Elon Musk comes to mind. The Google guys. Steve Jobs was a young guy. But what's important to note is most of the millionaires today have created their own wealth, not because they went out and was able to create a disruptive piece of technology. They did it through hard work. How do we know this? Because out of this same study came the most logical piece of information to me. But the fact that it's actually in print gives me another one of those wow moments. Are you ready for this? 70% of millionaires work 40 hours a week. So when people come to me and say, you know, how do you make it? I had a conversation with somebody on the phone today who was going for a job interview. And at the end of the day, I said, listen, don't be afraid to tell them you work hard. You raised 8 kids. You got up early. You stayed until the job had to get done. You're a hard worker. So it doesn't surprise me that millionaires today work 40 plus hours a week. When people ask me when I go to do a talk, what's the key to just work? I can't tell you I'm smarter than the next guy. So 70% of those that are that 1% that you hear out there, the 1%ers, are workers. So ultimately, I got to tell you, they didn't get lucky, as a former president liked to let everybody to believe. He can view it as luck, but guess what? Like I tell my kids, if you work hard and you get a break, is that luck or because you were working hard? We can debate it like the chicken or the egg, and every one of those phenomenons in life that we have to get philosophical about. More than 80% of those worth $25 million or more give at least $10,000 to charity. I find that, I think that's a small number, but I don't know enough about the stat, because I do know people with $25 million, and I would tell you majority of them are very, very philanthropic, to the point where they might not give it today, but it's earmarked to go. So I'm not sure that stat's fair. 21% give more than 21% give more than $100,000 to charity. So they're a generous group as a whole. Where am I going with this? What's it mean to you? What's it mean to your life and your wealth? I talk a lot about this commercial that's out, because there's always good, you know, there's always financial service company commercials, and some of them grind me wrong. And I always thought, geez, am I jaded because I'm part of an industry, Wall Street, that advertises themselves and promotes themselves in a way to the public that is very different than what's inside, because I've worked inside. And for the most part, the commercials don't really match what's inside. But one recently did connect with me. It happens to be a TD Ameritrade commercial where there's a couple young folks. I don't know. They're probably Gen Xers. They're sitting there on a couch, and they have a financial advisor who sort of looks like he could be a tech guy sitting there, and he's listening, and they're having a conversation. And the couple say, you know, we have $100,000. It's not a fortune, but is it enough for you to help us? And he says something powerful. He said, how long did it take you to save $100,000? And they said, a lifetime. And he says, it is a fortune. So the point is, it's the perception more than anything. And when I say the perception, that's important, because most millionaires, and I know a lot. Look, if you read up on my company, Cardasco Financial Network, we put in writing what we do. That's why we're a fiduciary. We're a fee-based company. That's why people know what they're getting into when they engage with me, because it's upfront and it's transparent. And there's a very clear number. You got to be one of these people to be able to work with us. That kept me up at night, and I created another company, Wisdom Planning, that can help people who don't have that kind of money. But for the most part, when you come to this company, that's what you need. Why? Because what it takes to work with that kind of money is expensive, and we have to cover that cost. So we need that we need those types of dollars. But it allows me to understand how that money was made. And most people who make that money don't have a goal to say, I want to make $1 million. That was never, for 99.9% of them, that was never the original goal. 25% of the people who make it into this space we're talking about, millionaires, are business owners. I can tell you how they started out. First, they wanted to have the company succeed past 5 years, where most businesses fail. They wanted to be able to cover debt. They wanted to take care of their family, educate their kids, take care of their employees. They go to bed worried most nights. They have to keep up with change. And then one day, in life, they look up and they're worth $1 million. Doesn't surprise me the average age is 62, because that's usually the period of time when people start to sell their businesses. So there's a different mindset. Baby boomers today view $1 million like it's nothing. Why? Well, think about it. If you're heading into retirement, you're 65 years old, what does $1 million generate in cash flow? That's what they're looking at it as. How is this going to provide for me? At 4% interest, that's $40,000 a year. Some would say, how do you live on $40,000 a year? And if you're 65, 20 years from now, you're 85. 85-year-olds are pretty damn healthy. So let's go back to the bionic man at $6 million. He's $34 million today. Double that period of time, $40,000 isn't going to be worth a heck of a lot when you're 78. I know a guy at 78 who's doing push-ups. I want to be that guy too. And you all do too. We're living in the greatest time ever. So for baby boomers, we're taking care of ourselves, doing what we can do right at this stage of life now to keep it going. We want to see more grandkids and great-grandkids and experience life. It's very different than millennials. $1 million to millennials seems like a lot of money. Why? Think about the car. They're thinking what kind of car they can buy, the house. A 26-year-old with $1 million sees it in a whole different way. Bottom line is, when you're setting goals, don't set it based on a number. There was a best-selling book called What's Your Number? And it was produced for those in the financial service industry and statisticians to say, what's your number? You need to know your number because that's the number you get to when you want to retire. As soon as you have that number, then you know you can go. No, that's wrong. It's more about your life than your wealth. Most business owners decide to retire not because they have the money, because it's time for them in their life. And that's when all of a sudden many of them realize they're a millionaire. But they're not buying a house and they're not buying the car. They're going the opposite direction with that stuff. So what does this mean to you? What does it mean to your life and your wealth? It's good to know that there's a mindset around goal setting. And there's a right way to goal set. When it comes to a number, I never think it's healthy to goal set that way. Nor when you're working with someone. What tends to happen when somebody's at that age of 62, they're not accustomed to that kind of wealth in their hands. And building a team around that is important. Why? Because the emotional connection to that money is powerful. There's fears that come with it. Shedding a business and now having this money puts you into a space that you don't know anything about, which is scary. What's even more scary? You can think back to the bionic man at $6 million that would cost $34 million today. We're at a stage of life as baby boomers to know that that money is not as powerful as it can be. That you need to deal with what comes with it, which is a lot of anxieties and fears. Working with family members, what kind of life do you want to live? It was all built on a certain lifestyle. And usually retirement brings you to a different lifestyle, of which then you recognize what you have. A team who understands that by your side can help you avoid mistakes, because mistakes can be made, just like a millennial getting $1 million who might hit that lottery. Buying the fancy car, getting a zip code, or I know someone who decided to take a few years off of work because $1 million sounded like enough to last a lifetime. Hey, it's the Your Life, Your Wealth Network. I'm Steve Cordasco. Don't forget, you can follow me on Facebook, facebook.com/CFNplan, or reach me at info@CFNplan.com. We'll be back in a moment.
Hi, Hugh Hewitt here. Do you have a sound retirement strategy? Have you taken the time to sit down and write a plan for achieving your retirement dream? Sadly, most of us spend more time planning our vacations than our own financial future. I'm here to tell the Delaware Valley a name that most people probably already know. Steve Cordasco. You've been listening to Steve for the last 25 years. You've been reading his articles in the Philadelphia Business Journal, Forbes, TheStreet.com. Steve Cordasco and his team have just come out with a new guide for retirement planning called Your Plan to a Successful Retirement. Get your copy right now at cfnplan.com. That's cfnplan.com. The guide is packed with helpful tips like how to make a retirement plan work for you, generating cash flow in retirement, tax saving strategies, ways to reduce stock market stress, investment solutions that match your risk, how to bring comfort and clarity to your retirement, much, much more. And now for my Hugh Hewitt listeners, I strongly recommend you get a copy of Steve Cardasco's guide, Your Plan to a Successful Retirement. Get your copy now at cfnplan.com. That's CFN, N as in network, plan.com. Go now to cfnplan.com.
And welcome back to the Your Life, Your Wealth Network. I'm Steve Cardasco. As promised, joining me now, we're going to head locally here to Vanguard. Chris Tidmore, who is Senior Investment Strategist in Vanguard's Investment Strategy Group, is going to spend some time with us talking about a study that was conducted that shows that an advisor, I guess not all advisors, but an advisor in general who does a good job of knowing you and helping navigate you and work with you can add as much as 3% value to the relationship. Chris, welcome to the show.
Thanks for having me.
Let's talk about the Vanguard Advisors Alpha Study. You just heard me showcase that 3% is a number that is part of that study in which a financial advisor helping someone else can add as much as 3% in value. Can you explain the study and where that 3% comes from?
Sure. About 15 years or so ago, first set out to just kind of set out the advisor's alpha itself without coming up with a number. And historically, kind of conventional wisdom has been that advisor's value is more about delivering market outperformance. And instead, this concept of advisor's alpha was based on a belief that the value or alpha that an advisor can provide is other much more difficult to quantify value adds, things related to portfolio construction, wealth management, and behavioral coaching, where really the clients kind of don't have either the time, willingness, or the ability to do some of these things on their own.
Mm-hmm. It's interesting because we buy into that philosophy, and I guess a while back found that, you know, where we have most success with the people we help and help them navigate their wealth, it involves their life. So we tie their life to their wealth, and we can learn as much as we can about how they work through their life, and it helps us navigate them through their wealth. So like on our website, we have lifestyle coaching, and we've actually trademarked it. And what that is, it's actually coaching folks with matching up their life with their wealth. And I think that's sort of what you guys are saying too, is that it's not just because you have a financial advisor, you're going to be guaranteed an extra 3%. It takes some work, and it takes some work in helping people navigate the complicated world of having wealth.
Correct.
How'd you go about the study? Tell me what type of stuff went into the study, and if you could, just quickly, because I would bet we have a lot of folks have no idea what the word alpha means.
Sure. Initially, it was a group within Vanguard that provided advisory services, people who had advisory experience outside of Vanguard, and realizing, as you were saying, that it's more than just trying to outperform. And what we looked at was, what are things that are typical value adds to the client? So you might have some things that are, you know, not very common, you know, maybe someone selling a business or something along those lines, but these were the things that are much more common, you know, things like getting a client in a low-cost, suitable asset allocation, mm-hmm. Regularly rebalancing the portfolio, mm-hmm. having the proper asset location so they're taxable or tax-inefficient investments in tax-deferred accounts and their tax-efficient investments in their taxable accounts. When they're in retirement, having a proper withdrawal strategy. We looked at, you know, having a total return portfolio versus just a portfolio that you're worried about the income generation. And then the seventh and the biggest one is this aspect of behavioral coaching, mm-hmm. helping clients reach their goals. And those were really the seven that we kind of framed out in the original Advisors Alpha. And then about, I'd say maybe 10 years later, we set out, after a lot of questions about it, set out to quantify that. And that's where that, about 3%. And what you find is that, that's on average. It's not every client. Some are considerably more. Some are considerably less. Some of it's more ongoing. So, obviously lower cost is going to save you money on an ongoing basis. Other things are more situational, keeping your client invested, when they want to move all their money in cash.
Right.
So that's where when we went through the metrics of those seven and kind of came up with ranges of numbers, that's where we get to the about 3%.
So just to guide some clarity here, it's not a Vanguard advisor that adds 3%. It's really any advisor who can do a good job of doing those inputs, right, that can lead to that 3%. It could be any advisor. So one part that's fascinating that we struggle with, because people kind of scratch their head and they say, lifestyle coaching, what's that? And you say, well, behavioral coaching. Like, wait a minute, what is that? Talk a little bit about that, because that's an important part of this study, the coaching aspect.
Correct. And if you think about it, it's the part that's very difficult to replicate without a human interaction. I'd say the three main behaviors I would say that an advisor helps coach on. One is avoiding performance chasing, whether or not that's the latest and greatest stock or the fund that recently outperformed or the asset class. This would be the tech bubble or real estate in the mid-2000s. The second one would be things with sticking with what the plan that you have, so not bailing, not overreacting to the news media, whether or not in the past year it's Brexit or the U.S. presidential election. And then I'd say the third thing is trying not to time the market. So an advisor helping clients to avoid all three, that's where the real value with the behavior comes about.
Here's where I struggle, Chris, in that space, right? Because it's a space that I find myself living in. I've gone now in almost 20X amount of years of being in this business, that if I go and I try to mentor other advisors, or if I visit other advisory offices because they want to know what the heck, behavioral coaching is or lifestyle coaching, they're like, so you're a shrink? And I'm going to say, you know what? Actually, I read more psychology reports than I read stock reports. My career didn't start that way, though, right? I felt as if the only value I was adding is some piece of information about a company that was going to give somebody a return. I actually thought my clients wanted me for investment performance, and what I found out, shockingly, is that they were all here because of something else, and that something else is they can't handle their own emotions and anxieties and temperament around all the noise that circulates in the media, amongst friends and family members, when it comes to their wealth and it affects their life. And I guess ultimately, that's what we're saying here, right? But yet, many advisors out there, they're afraid to get that intimate with their clients. They're afraid to talk about what's really keeping them up at night, what's really bothering them, because as soon as somebody comes in and says, I'm tired of this market, I'm tired, Trump's in, I'm out of here, they're just reactive. They're not going to hold the person accountable.
So there's, I guess, two different things I'd say about that. One is, and it's kind of a play on words, is I think a lot of people think of their advisor as a professional investor, where more they're an investment professional.
Mm-hmm.
So there's that part. And part of that is the kind of, as you were saying, being the bit of the psychologist. And so we were interested in, why do we keep seeing this performance chasing? Why do we see difficulty sticking with the plan, trying to time the market? And about a year ago, we did some research, and there's a paper we put out called Reframing Investors' Choices. And what it looked at was typical decision-making process that people have. And let's just take something like as easy as you need a new car. So what's your process? You figure out you need a new car. Your second thing is collect information, whether or not that's friends, family, magazine, online. And from that, you evaluate that information. You figure out that, based on this, I need a reliable car that's going to last, good gas mileage, so on. I'm going to buy a Honda Accord. It's done well in the past. So I buy that Honda Accord, and then 6 months, a year, 5 years down the road, I evaluate my decision, and more likely than not, I'm very happy with my decision based on how it did in the past, all the research, it has persistence. And that works whether or not, you know, you're looking at an Ivy League school, or you're looking at an appliance, or you're looking at a hotel to go on vacation. And the problem is that same process that served us well for, you know, thousands of years doesn't work well in the investment industry. Mm-hmm. And so it's having that conversation with the client to say, I understand why you want to do this, but there's not persistence in performance, and it's why we're trying to, it's understandable why you'd want to be doing these things, but the same thing that serves you well in other things won't serve you well in trying to chase performance.
And that's right. And in our industry, it's very difficult for a financial advisor to say why. And when you say why, it makes you sound what? Not smart. And, you know, there's this thing that, I don't know if it was the way that the industry marketed itself years ago, you know, when Ian F. Hutton speaks, everybody listens, or whatever the trademark commercials are. I think, you know, TD has a fantastic commercial out right now where it's just a conversation. And $100,000 that it took somebody a lifetime to save, and they said, well, it's not a fortune, and the advisor says it is a fortune. He's listening. The word why is very difficult because you said it, right? You said ask why, and I think many advisors have a mental block to do that. Lastly, I'll leave you with this, just to talk about how clouded it is. Vince, you know, is my producer here. He's also on WIP. You hear him there, and he's does a lot of work in the sports place. He said, Steve, did you see the front page of the Wall Street Journal? I said, yeah, I kind of saw it. He goes, BlackRock is using robots now over people and picking stocks. I think we need to talk about that in this thing. But you're right. It clouds it because a lot of people think we're, as an investment advisor, I'm picking stocks, and I'm a money manager. I'm not. So it goes back to this study, will robots ever be able to take and replace me, Steve Cordasco, as a financial advisor? And meaning that can the robot add the 3% instead of me?
I mean, I'm sure you'd find people out there that will believe that, probably even within Vanguard, that believe that that will happen at some point. I'm a little older. I have difficulty in I guess, believing that, at least in my lifetime, that will be replaced, that human interaction. You know, we saw what happened to a firm, you know, whatever, 9-10 months ago when they, when something happened, they wanted to shut off a certain behavior. You know, they weren't able to do that. They weren't able to stop people from, by just the computer, they weren't sure what exactly to do.
I love the topic. I debate it all the time with my kids. I'll leave you with this, because at the end of the day, I think where a lot of that 3% comes from is the fact that somebody can be there intimately to deal with compassion, emotions, anxieties that are human elements. And if the robot can replace that, then I guess weddings will become obsolete because I'm getting myself a robot.
Very true.
We'll leave it there. Hey, thanks, my friend. You guys do great work at Vanguard. Thanks for all you do and how you help the local economy and the type of operation you have. Ladies and gentlemen, that's Chris Tidmore, Senior Investment Strategist at Vanguard's Investment Strategy Group. Thanks, Chris.
Thank you. My pleasure.
Yep. It's the Your Life, Your Wealth Network. I'm Steve Cordasco. Shoot me an email. What do you think of the topic? info@cfnplan.com. That's info@cfnplan.com. There's also good information that we're posting on Facebook. Go to facebook.com/cfnplan. You can find it there. We'll be back in just a moment.
Hey, Rich Dilley here. My friend Steve Cordasco, financial advisor and founder of Cordasco Financial Network, is back with a new retirement guide called Your Plan to a Successful Retirement. This guide is packed with helpful tips like how to make a retirement plan work for you, how to successfully generate cash flow in retirement, and how to utilize great tax savings strategies. This guide also uncovers the best practices to reduce stock market stress, how to find investment solutions that match your risk tolerance, and how to bring comfort and clarity to your retirement. Whether you are taking the first steps to retirement planning and don't know where to start, are in pre-retirement and looking to accumulate wealth, or already retired and looking to preserve your wealth, you should get a copy of Steve Cordasco's guide, Your Plan to a Successful Retirement, and it's totally free. Get your copy right now at cfnplan.com. That's CFN, N as in network, plan.com. Go right now to cfnplan.com.
And welcome back to the Your Life, Your Wealth Network. I'm Steve Cordasco. Boy, it seems like we're going to talk a lot about robots, because it falls into the place of change. So I would say the theme of the show today is change and how well we deal with change. Change creates a lot of anxiety for people. It creates emotions around fear. People don't like change, especially when we get older. And as you look at baby boomers don't like change. They like, you know, things to stay the way they are. They get nostalgic and comfortable in their ways. Gen Xers are able to tolerate change a little bit more. And the reason why I bring it up is because the world is changing at the fastest pace that it's ever changed. Meaning, if you're in business, many businesses are saying that the environment that they operate under is no longer within a 4-year cycle or 5-year cycle. Many companies would do a 5-year cycle plan. They're saying now change is happening within 18 to 24 months, very short period of time, and you have to be able to adapt and maneuver. And hence, if the individuals who are representing you aren't changing, you're being hurt by that. We just talked about it with Vanguard, where an advisor can add 3% by performing in three different areas, one being behavioral coaching. So my question to you is, how do you deal with the change? Many baby boomers are saying, world's gone to hell in a handbasket. All this stuff, this is crazy. It's going to, you know, I don't like it. It's not a good thing. But I'm in your camp. I'm older. But are we just old? Because if I look at millennials, they embrace the change. They're not afraid. They're used to it. Something will take them out of their comfort zone down the road. I don't know what that is. I'm not a futurist. But for now, they're a demographic that's getting marketed to, and they can adapt to change. Many of the Gen Xers, which I've kind of fallen in that. I'm playing in both camps here because my birthday falls in the middle there. My first reaction to change, I struggle a little bit, but then I try to see it from all sides. And then I try to look at studies to see whether or not the change is for the better of the end cause. And if it is, then I try to surround myself with people who can give me a positive attitude towards that change. I think point is, how are we dealing with all the changes in our lives? Hey, if you're a business owner, how are you dealing with it? Because I'm talking to a lot of business owners anymore. Say, I need to sell. I need to get out. Many retire because they don't feel they can keep up with the pace of the world today. Unfortunately, it creates a grumpiness in some. That's the emotions and the anxieties. Where is this going? Well, I'm going to kind of tell a fun story now. Because if you're trying to relate change and maybe you're having a tough time with you and you accept it, we can just look at a company. Take a look at Amazon. My son the other night was having a birthday dinner. It was my birthday. Dad, did you hear what's happening? What, Vin? I thought I was going to get a happy birthday. Amazon's got these stores. You can walk in, take whatever you want, and walk out. It just charges your credit card. You don't have to pay. I'm like, Vin, you still have to pay. No, yeah, you have to pay, but you can walk right out. It automatically, you pay. I'm like, wait a minute. You still got to pay. He's like, Dad, I know. You don't have to wait in line. We were talking about the same thing. He's just ecstatic over what that experience is going to be like. He's getting the same product that he could get anywhere, but let's say Walmart, if you went into this Amazon store, or he could order it from Amazon and still get it. What is he excited about? That, the fact he can walk in and walk out with it. It's something he wants to experience. He'll get some type of an emotional rush until the credit card bill comes in, maybe. But the amazing part of this story, because I was going to talk about it on the Your Life, Your Wealth program, but not talk about it from the experience of what somebody's going to feel when they take on this new channel that Amazon's putting in place. I was going to talk about the fact that Amazon is building brick and mortar stores. Here's a company that was the antithesis of that. That Jeff Bezos, who was running the company, said, brick and mortar stores are going to be gone. And now the pendulum swings the other way. He's going to create brick and mortar stores. From what? He's realizing that there's certain products that Amazon can't sell in their normal distribution channel, like groceries, like books, as effectively. But what he can control is the pricing, because they have so much power from a pricing standpoint. Think about it. I spent much of my career talking about Walmart and what separated Walmart apart from everybody else. It was a technology company. They were one of the first that created a system where there were barcodes and they knew every product in the store, where it was going. They even knew the people who were walking into the store and what direction they were headed, because everything had a computer chip in it. And Walmart was a technology company because they could efficiently know the habits of the people, and therefore buy effectively and be a low-cost provider. Look, the Waltons became one of the richest families in the world. Think of how many competitors they had. JCPenney, Macy's. How many went out of business? Sears. They disrupted Sears. For many of you baby boomers, there was a generation that Sears was everything. You could buy a house through a Sears catalog. Sears was disrupted by who? Walmart. Walmart was disrupted, and we never thought it was going to happen, by Amazon in a big way. Because Walmart had expensive channels. Now, they tried to get in on the technology side and be an online provider, but that became difficult. I don't know why they couldn't perform as well as Amazon. But now Amazon is going that way with brick and mortar. They held the funeral, the music was playing, it's the end of retail as you know it, and it's true. JCPenney shuttering stores, Macy's has just announced they're shuttering more stores. Amazon, just within the last few years, has earned a profit, which validates that that type of business can exist and make money, because many thought for a decade that there was no way it was ever going to make money and it would blow up at one point. They did it. Now that they're making money, they're looking to continue so that they don't become a victim like a JCPenney's or a Macy's. That's an important word, become a victim. They need to keep pushing forward with innovation. They're doing it through brick and mortar. When I read this story, I thought, geez, you know, this is a sign that maybe something's not right within. They need to you know, they're trying to capture more. Is this greed? And then my son belts out the Amazon story. How does a 15-year-old know that Amazon is building brick-and-mortar stores? And why is it cool to a 15-year-old? Cool to a 15-year-old is he can go to Amazon Prime, hit a button, and know that something is going to come to him. Lacrosse balls, socks, a skateboard. He just has to, when he gets home from school, it's going to be there. He even knows it's going to be 2 days because he can decide whether he wants to pay the extra money to get it there in 2 days. But he's blown away by walking into a store and walking out with something. He doesn't have to wait in a line, he told me. It was a wake-up call to me because I'm questioning this out. So Amazon knows something, that people want this experience. Where does this all go to you and your life and your wealth? Change is inevitable. Has to happen. It will happen. It will continue to happen. It's how you embrace it. My son embraced it with euphoria. He can't wait. And it was infectious. It makes me want to do it. Too many of us don't like change. We get grumpy, miserable, and we stick with what we're doing because we want to fight it. Why? Ultimately, because we're scared of it. And it goes back to who's helping you with your life and your wealth. Because your wealth is part of your life and your life is part of your wealth. Money isn't the means to the end, right? It's not. It's just part of the process. And whatever, in the end, it makes us feel, because that's what it does. It creates a feeling. When you don't have wealth, you feel what? Broke. Do you know what broke is? I know broke, because I've been broke. Coming out of college with debt and parents who didn't have a trust fund. Do you know wealth? Wealth is just as challenging. A lot of other complications that come with that. But in the end, it all evolves around your life. And it creates emotions and feelings, anxieties. And in the world that we're playing in, when it comes to somebody helping you with your money or you doing it yourself, change is happening very quickly. And you have to keep up with that change. Just like Amazon. It's now changing. Doesn't mean they're going away. They're testing this. And by the way, they're having some struggles with it. They had a technical glitch and a setback, but they're going to do that as an innovator. Anybody who is new at doing something, like in my practice, we're doing a lot of innovation. But I won't be somebody who pushes something out as a leader. It doesn't make sense for me to lead with the innovation. There's too much risk to that. Vanguard can go out and take the risk and lead in innovation because I can use that innovation in my practice. So we spend a lot of time, if you look at our website, cfnplan.com, you'll see three areas that we focus on. Planning, spend tons of time trying to get that planning piece to stay as up to date and technology ready as possible. Investment solutions, same there. Constantly working with companies like a Vanguard or like a Fidelity to how do we become most efficient in that space. And then lifestyle coaching, which got everybody like, what is that? It's how you behave with your wealth and how it matches your life. Not much of the industry has taken that on. They don't understand it. They still think that you, the public, want an investment advisor to go find stocks and bonds for them, to invest, be their money managers. The better money managers don't talk to people. They sit in a room. They're not schmoozing to try to get to know somebody better to help them go find a stock or a bond. They're looking at numbers. They're analytical. They want to find something that is going to do what the objective is, whether it's value, which means they have to find something that's worth more than what it's being priced at. It's a different piece to the puzzle. The other side is robots are starting to do that. Front page of the paper, BlackRock, which used people, they're one of the biggest asset management companies, are now using robots to replace people. Why? Because they can analyze the markets. It can trade. It can do all of that kind of stuff. But it's all irrelevant to you, the end user, unless somebody understands you or you have a team that understands you. If you think you understand you, good luck with that. You might today, but at some point, it becomes a scary place as the world changes and you're feeling very alone because you're trying to take it all on yourself. So keep that in mind. It's important to note. And somebody by your side, especially if you're a baby boomer, because change can be scary and fearful, to help navigate you through that, can get you to a place that makes your life more comfortable and of better quality. Hey, I'm Steve Cordasco. It's Your Life, Your Wealth Network. Tell me what you think. Amazon, creating brick and mortar stores. Love to hear your input. Info at cfnplan.com. Also, you can find the piece that we're talking about up on Facebook, facebook.com/cfnplan. Back in a moment.
Hi, Hugh Hewitt here. Do you have a sound retirement strategy? Have you taken the time to sit down and write a plan for achieving your retirement dreams? Sadly, most of us spend more time planning our vacations than our own financial future. I'm here to tell the Delaware Valley a name that most people probably already know. Steve Cordasco. You've been listening to Steve for the last 25 years. You've been reading his articles in the Philadelphia Business Journal, Forbes, TheStreet.com. Steve Cordasco and his team have just come out with a new guide for retirement planning called Your Plan to a Successful Retirement. Get your copy right now at cfnplan.com. That's cfnplan.com. The guide is packed with helpful tips like how to make a retirement plan work for you, generating cash flow in retirement, tax saving strategies, ways to reduce stock market stress, investment solutions that match your risk, how to bring comfort and clarity to your retirement, much, much more. And now for my Hugh Hewitt listeners, I strongly recommend you get a copy of Steve Cordasco's guide, Your Plan to a Successful Retirement. Get your copy now at cfnplan.com. That's CFN, N as in network, plan.com. Go now to cfnplan.com.
And welcome back to the Your Life, Your Wealth Network. Let's talk about investing and the world of the markets. Investing comes in many different forms and shapes. We have something called investment solutions as one of our pillars here at Cordasco Financial Network. And the reason why the word solutions is there is because it's not always about stocks and bonds. It's about other things, maybe buying a beach house, selling a property, a business, making an investment in a decision you have to make. Everything from education to hard assets. But in this case, we talk about the markets, right? Because the markets are something that are reported on almost daily. You listen to KYW maybe on your drive in and they give a market report. You tune in to the evening news and they talk about what the markets have done for the day. I know ABC does it as they go to commercials. They'll list what the Dow did for the day. Sometimes there's verbiage behind it, sometimes not. Seems like the verbiage behind it comes when there's volatility or there's some action in the markets. What has been bringing action to the markets, at least over the past few years, is with geopolitical turmoil and things that have happened in the world, attacks, terrorism, conflicts. And that has caused volatility, and it's, it has people worked up, right? We heard of Brexit and what that was going to do, and we saw that, thought the markets were going to collapse. And then all of a sudden, the markets go down, and they whip back pretty quickly. Donald Trump gets elected. I remember, you know, waiting for him to walk out on stage, and the communication I was having with the clients of mine that were up during that hour, talking about the chaos in the marketplace. And what the next day was going to be like, a bloodbath. And what happened? Nothing. My point is this. There was a recent article in the Wall Street Journal that says, financial markets are becoming numb to terrorist attacks, one-time events, things that are normally considered chaos in the world, and the markets are shaking it off. For example, this week, I'll read from the Wall Street Journal. Actually, it was last week. Didn't make last week's show because it's one of these stories that we can continually talk about, and I will. But the paper reads this way. Financial markets barely budge following Wednesday's deadly attack in London. Increasing conviction that such tragedies are unlikely to shake the business and economies of affected regions. Bottom line is, many thought that there would be some type of economic fallout from this, meaning the markets would react to a terrorist attack. They're not. They might for a brief moment. So what does this do to you? Because there has been, over the short period of time here in our lifetime, since 9/11, a lot of emotion and anxiety amongst people who have money that they can invest that are tied to the markets, of fear and saying something could happen and I'm going to lose all my money. And when something happened on 9/11, yes, it created some chaos, volatility. People were fearful. And for a period of time, their money went down. It corrected itself. And then we get to 2008, a financial crisis. And it went down and it caused many to give up and leave altogether investing because they were waiting for the next big thing to happen in which they would lose money again. it all creates emotions and anxiety that causes us to do something. People who got out in 2008 and never back in will never be able to make that money back up. People who trusted maybe their financial advisor and decided to keep forging forward did well. And here we are today. It seems the pain point is much different. And I'd like to know what it means to you. Where are you on that pain point, knowing that here we have all these things that the media creates that should cause a stock market crash or a correction or volatility, and it's not happening? Is that good or bad? My question is, what's causing it not to happen? We've talked about algorithms that trade in the markets all the time and whether they're good or bad. The average investor can't compete with a computer when it comes to trading. I need to do a little bit more studying. Is this the computers realizing that that terrorist attack, nuclear meltdown in Japan, radical president getting elected, not going to cause a market crash? Or when it starts to go down, jumping in so soon props it up? We might have a system now where this computer stuff that's trading day in and day out that we thought was hurting us might be helping us, if that's really what's supporting the marketplace. Or is it average everyday investors just resilient from it and saying, you know what? I've seen it all. Terrorist attack in London? Eh, what's that? Brexit? Ugh. Guy gets elected with a different agenda, point of view, and fluffy hair? Eh, we're still going to be okay. There's a psychology in the market, and that's what's important to know about the stock market. Just thought, something for you to chew on over the weekend. I'm Steve Cardasco. It's a Your Life, Your Wealth Network. Don't forget, we broadcast on 990 WNTP. You can also reach me. Send me an email, info@cfnplan.com. Love to hear from you. You can follow me on Twitter @CFNplan. Also Facebook, facebook.com/CFNplan. Make it a great week.
Thanks for joining us on the Your Life, Your Wealth Network. All of our shows are reproduced as podcasts and can be listened to on demand at your convenience. If you're interested in learning more about applying the principles we discuss to your personal financial circumstances, please visit Cardasco Financial Network at cfnplan.com or call our office at 215-558-3500. We hope you'll join us again next time on the Your Life, Your Wealth Network.